Hello, welcome to Universal Solum. This is Dr. Lana Love.
And this is Detective David Love. Welcome to our show.
And we have with us today the lovely Alexia May, my daughter.
Hi, everyone.
Very proud to have you here today.
Thank you.
Alexia, at the age of 18, is already an animal activist, a vegan lifestyle promoter, and a nutritional expert.
Thanks.
Alexia has her own blog and has been active in many ways in the vegan lifestyle and animal activism.
And she's very passionate, and we're very proud of Alexia for what she's done in animal rights activism and with veganism and educating people and the benefits and of having a vegan lifestyle and making healthy choices and humane treatment of animals and just, you know, for being you.
Thanks.
So Alexia, tell us a little bit about how you started on animal rights activism and on the vegan lifestyle.
Okay, so it was probably about 6 years ago, actually. And my mum, this lovely lady right here, got me into it, actually. She was up all night. And, excuse me, just come out of a cold. I woke up one morning, I was probably about, like, 12, something like that. And, she was on the couch and she was crying, she was bawling her eyes out, and she just turned the phone to face me, and it was a video of a slaughterhouse. It was my first ever experience. I'd never come in contact with anything like that before, and I remember picking up the phone and throwing it across the room. I got so angry, but yeah, I've never touched milk, dairy, any animal products since then. So
I remember that, it's all to thank
to my mom.
So tell us, what is veganism? So some people are not sure the difference between veganism and vegetarianism.
So veganism is defined as not using any single products that contain animal products in them for any use, whether it be like driving on leather seats, whether it be washing yourself with a milk and honey body wash, or eating milk, dairy, eggs, honey. So vegans refrain from using any sort of animal products or anything in general.
It's a whole lifestyle. It's not just
It is a lifestyle. You can't wear leather. You can't... And yeah, there's a lot more to it than just the diet side of it.
And can you explain to people, why is it that eggs and dairy products is as important, if not more important, than not eating meat?
Yeah, so meat, for one, is a big one. But for me, dairy is actually more so important than meat. One, we're not baby cows. So why are we drinking baby cow milk? It makes no sense. If you want to drink milk, well, one, there are so many milk products out there. There's nut milks, there's soy milks, there's hemp milk, but if you want milk that badly, we should be drinking milk of our own species, for God's sake, not just like cow milk. It's weird. But cow milk has a hormone in it called IGF-1, and IGF-1 stimulates the pituitary gland, which is the gland right near your throat. And that gland is responsible for the growth, multiplication, like division of cells, whatever. And when that hormone, IGF-1, gets into your gland, it will re-promote the division of cells. And it's actually carcinogenic. It's cancer-promoting. Because we get cancer cells in our body every single day, but we're healthy enough to be able to recognize them and kill them off and fight them off as soon as our body recognizes them as cancer cells. But this IGF-1 makes our body stimulate cell growth so fast that our body can't necessarily recognize the difference between a good cell and a bad cell. So it's actually really dangerous to drink milk. And not only that, but milk has pus in it. Like, if you think about it, when you have milk, there needs to be a calf as well, and many people don't think about that, that when there's milk, there's also a baby cow involved in that. And when you drink milk, you take that away from a baby calf who needs it from his mother. Like, sorry. And, yeah. So
does that have to do with the antibiotics that they might put
in? With milk as well, the mother has her teat strapped to a suction device. like 24/7. It gets crusty, it gets sore, it gets pussy. There are cysts there. Like it gets filled with pus and blood and not to mention the ethical reasons not to drink milk.
It's very cruel.
Oh God, it is awful. It's awful. Imagine being raped by a machine, forced to like be inseminated, and then have your baby cow ripped away from you, kicking and screaming. If it's a male cow, he might even be killed in front of you. Like, it's the worst thing any animal, any female woman, like being a cow or a person, a giraffe, a gorilla, will experience ever. It's awful. It's so cruel.
And I think it's been acknowledged that cows are actually intelligent and very sociable creatures.
Oh, they're such gentle creatures. They really are. Didn't we just pet a cow yesterday? And they're so sweet. They're such sweet, gentle creatures. Like, if they don't hurt us, why should we hurt them?
It's very sad that our world has come to this with factory farming. It's really mass-produced everything, and it mass-produced actually the torture of the animals.
Not to mention the sixth mass extinction of the planet, and thank you very much for all the corporations, large contributors to this problem and to the fact that my stepdaughter may not have a future now. I appreciate that everyone that's contributed to that and the extinction of all these species that are probably not going to be here much longer.
But I think we can do something about it. I don't think it's that late. And certainly a lot of the veganism is a growing movement. It's certainly a growing movement in Australia.
It definitely is, yeah. And especially amongst the youth as well.
Is it?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. It's become almost like a fad trend to be vegan, and I hope it's not just a trend. I hope people, well, they will, because I mean, once you see what's out there and the horror that we shelter ourselves from in terms of factory farming, it's really something that you can't unsee. So I do believe that when someone goes vegan, they do become vegan for life, and if they don't, there's something wrong with you.
So I think there are a number of reasons to become vegan, aren't there? We've talked about the moral. The morality of it.
There's actually a massive, massive spiritual benefit to being veganism. Sorry again. Going vegan actually started my spiritual journey so much so that it's incredible to look back on now and see where I was and how far I've come because of veganism. And it makes sense when you explain it, because everything is a vibration. And when you consume the flesh or the milk or any product of the animal that has gone through a lifetime of pain and torture and suffering, and that vibration, the terror, that like the constant horror that animal is kept in, is going to pass down through your food. And when you consume that, you consume all the terror and all the horror and all the gross ugh that animal has been put through. And it's an exchange of energies, you know? And in that way, meat is so good at lowering your vibration, so good at lowering your vibration, so good at shutting off any pathways to your pineal gland, your third eye. It's when you become vegan, you higher your vibration by putting alive foods into you, you know, not dead foods like meat, alive fruits like pineapples and watermelons and all that plant-based food that's so good to heighten your vibration.
And I guess it takes a long time for meat to digest.
You know that in your even after me going vegan for 6 years, there is still remnants of meat in my digestive tract. That is such a gross thing to think about. Like, our bodies aren't meant to eat meat. Our jaws grind from side to side like a monkey or like an omnivore. If we were carnivorous, our jaws would go up and down.
Yeah, and I think there's also the gastrointestinal tract.
Oh, yeah.
We have quite a long gastrointestinal tract, whereas carnivores like, you know, tigers and lions, they have a very short gastrointestinal tract. So there are certain physical reasons to believe that we are not carnivores.
We are not carnivores. Hell no.
And wow, this is very educational for me. I became vegan simply because I entered a vegan household, and it's difficult to be a meat eater in a plain eating household. I certainly got the health benefits of it, but I certainly learning a lot from this. I didn't even think about the idea of that you're actually ingesting trauma.
You are.
And that's
it's awful.
Something I hadn't thought about. So that's really a revelation
for me. And if you're looking to awaken and open your third eye and really grow spiritually, going vegan is the first thing you do that is actually going to propel that forward.
Mm. Have you felt a difference in the spiritual vibration?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was only a kid when I did go vegan, but... Mm. As I started looking into it and researching it more and really becoming passionate about what I was doing, I really started to, notice a difference about how, like, complete mind shift in a way.
Absolutely. I was talking to our wonderful producer this morning, Dog Newsom, who's here on BBS Radio Network, who we're fortunate enough to have produced the show for us. And we were talking about healthy lifestyles, and he made a simple statement to me this morning. What you put into your body is,
you are what you eat.
It's so simple.
You are what you eat, though. That's something that's been said for so long. Like great-grandparents have said it, and I will continue to say it, because you literally are what you eat.
So what are the main health benefits of being vegan?
Main health benefits? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, David, how much weight did you lose?
So at one point, I must have been 230 pounds. I don't know what that is in kilos, but that's,
It's 108 or something.
So I lost, before I came to Australia, I must have went down to about 180 pounds. And from there, I became vegan about a month before I came here, and I went down to 160, which is my normal healthy weight. I have much more energy. I'm generally not sick. Maybe once or twice a year I get a cold, as people do. There's one going around right now. I've more productive. I used to be so much slower. And of course, I wrote my book, Illusion of the Body. I wrote a lot about health. And I used to drink a lot of Diet Coke trying to lose weight. Six cans of Diet Coke sometimes a day, even aspartame. And so I started learning a lot about nutrition and writing a lot about glutamate and excitotoxins and how they pass through the blood-brain barrier. And then I met you, and certainly I became
vegan.
But I'm now becoming educated as well, which is great, because I think education is the best way to go. I don't know that it's always helpful to walk up to somebody and say, do you know what you're doing? Sometimes you will do this if you see torture going on, but if you see someone eating food, just like we weren't always vegan, we used to be meat eaters, as you said, and it's not always useful for a vegan, and I know activists often do this when they get angry about it, and they'll say, when they see someone eating a hamburger, you're a murderer.
I have a story. I was living in Bondi in my apartment for my 17th birthday, and my had a party going on, and a girl decided to bring some butter chicken into my apartment. And, of course, I threw it out the window. But now I know that was completely very... wrong thing to do. You can't you can't enforce your own beliefs on someone like that. I've learned that people will either listen or they won't. There are two types of people. One that are willing to change and willing to grow, and one that are so stuck in their ways that they're just better off ignoring anyway.
Mm-hmm. But I think we have a role in educating people gently, mm-hmm. perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there's so much misinformation out there from the meat industry and the dairy industry, that it's important to correct those views.
Mm. Education is, I think, the best way. However, I do think there are times when you're going to be a radical activist, when you see torture happening in front of you.
Exactly. If you see someone, like if you see a dog being kicked in the head, you're not going to say something. You're going to want to kick him in the head.
Or you're going to put a stop to it. I don't know where the boundary lines are this, because we know that animals are probably being tortured right now in certain plants.
If slaughterhouses had glass walls, this wouldn't happen. It's happening. It's like there's a Holocaust happening at the moment, right now as we speak.
The biggest Holocaust that has ever happened and ever will happen, to say the least.
And it's very sad that it's hard to do anything about it, but certainly we, the consumers, can make a huge difference.
Oh, it's all consumers, and it starts with you. It really does start with that one person that then goes and influences their family or their friends, or it's all a chain reaction, domino effect.
You know, first of all, you have to be insightful about it. You know, it's like you can you can love animals and feel sorry for the for what's happening to them, but you actually have to make
the connection
between when you go to a supermarket, between the dead meat that you see and the pain and suffering.
Or the steak on your plate and a body part, not just steak. That's why these companies have made up names like steak and what else?
Schnitzel.
And there's one for, like, ham.
But it's bacon instead of...
Bacon and ham. That's not bacon. That's not ham. That's not schnitzel. That is a pig. Mm. That is a cow. That is a chicken. Those are animals.
And we're also talking about the way things are done, the process and the manufacturing of this and the hoarding of the animals and whatnot. That's very different to 2,000 years ago or more when we had Native American Indians who lived off the land. We didn't have agricultural totalitarianism, farming. They weren't penning up hens and chickens and sheep and cows. They would go out and they would hunt, they would eat, they would use everything. Then they would move on. They wouldn't just strip the land bare and torture animals.
I think that if we were actually made to kill our own meat, so many people would put down the knife and pick up a fork and go for a watermelon instead. Like, there's a very big difference between just going to the store and buying meat. Like, everything needs to be an equal exchange of energy, and right now, it is not.
No.
You know, that life that has lived out, you know, those several years that animal has lived, it's not an equal exchange of energy if you drive in your car, going to Coles and picking up a steak. You know, it's not. If you want to go and kill an animal yourself and look it in the eye and take away its life, whatever, that's you. You do you, but it's an equal exchange of energy, you know?
I can say, if you can't kill it yourself,
you shouldn't be
then
eating
don't
it.
Eat it.
And I guess this is where the fundamental disconnect happens that we spoke about in a previous show, where we look at a piece of steak. We don't know where that piece of steak actually came from or what that animal went through so that we could eat that steak. And we need to know these things. I mean, it's very disrespectful. It's a life form. And I know we've had Derek Jensen with Deep Green Resistance on our show in the past talking about this very thing, about these issues, because he's called the ecological poet philosopher, and we had a deep discussion about this issue, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so a lot of in-your-face issues here, a lot of us as humans being more aware of what's happening and not being sort of lied to by the industries and actually awakening to
it's,
the reality.
It's funny because there's a new documentary on Netflix. It's really good. It's called What the Health. It's all about the health benefits of veganism. And I was watching it and something really stood out to me. And it was the Cancer Council, all of these major corporations that we think are for our benefit, like the Blood Vessel Association or whatever, they're all sponsored by major meat industries. Isn't that funny?
That
the Cancer Council, who that has named meat in a stage one carcinogen together with smoking cigarettes, they've named meat next to smoking cigarettes. They are sponsored by major meat corporations.
That's appalling.
Yeah. It's so funny.
And I hate to be, I want to step back because I was pretty accusatory earlier about certain corporations or many of them being the primary contributors to the sixth mass extinction of the planet that we seem to be facing, that I'm hearing about from people like Bruce Lipton and author Andrew Harvey. But anyhow, I guess we all bear responsibility, and I don't like to play the blame game and accuse. And, you know, we're here now in this moment, and it's just important that we become more responsible and more active and, you know, and not...
It's not a pushy, you did this and I did that. No, it's all up to you. If you choose not to go and buy some meat, then that's your wonderful, beautiful choice you're making. It's all up to you. You have so much more responsibility than you think you do. Mm. We're not so controlled by everything. You know, we still make the choice, conscious choice, every day to do everything we do.
The power of choice is one of our most powerful, the most powerful forces in the universe. The power of choice is our primary manifesting power.
Of course, we need to, it's a mass choice, and that's why, you know, the masses need to awaken, you know.
And I think that is happening.
And I know that you've talked to a lot of people your age, and you've given them the information, and a lot of them have gone vegan.
I have 90% of my closest, dearest friends are vegan.
As a result of you talking to them,
as a result of me just literally pouring my heart on the table and saying that, look, like, I just don't want to hurt anything. Like, I just don't want to hurt anything. I want to live my life and die as and knowing that I haven't made a negative impact, you know? We have this saying amongst all my friends that we're not here to tread on grass. And I think that really just, yeah.
So we started talking about the health aspect of it. And I'd like to, as a doctor, I'd just like to say that, you know, unfortunately, medicine tends to be a lot of, you know, we seem to be all about curing symptoms. Mm-hmm. The pharmaceutical industry is all about
But not the treatment.
Prevention is really important. And certainly the information that I have read is that veganism can really reverse a lot of heart disease, diabetes. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing stuff. Now, this is still on the fringe. And there are a lot of doctors that are, well, they're still a minority group, but that talk about the importance of diet in reversing health, in reversing disease, but it's not acknowledged by mainstream medicine, and that's a real
problem. I don't know why it's not, because there have been so many studies, like the China study, for example, and that just proves that we can cure any disease as long as we get our body into an alkaline state, and which includes going into a plant-based vegan diet. All of this has been proven, so I've got no idea why. It's just because the mainstream media is controlled by all these pharmaceutical industries, is controlled by all of these major conglomerates that do have the power and that don't want this almost magic given to everyone. Because there's, again, What the Health, this major, a really, really good documentary to watch on Netflix. It just says that every disease can be cured just by changing your diet. You know, diet is such a big thing, and we don't realize that it's not the little white pill that'll cure us in the end. It's what we put in our bodies.
And it's a problem that we knew as a doctor, when I was a medical student, nutrition was not a huge part of what we learned. And it actually should be so much. It should be the most vital part of it.
I think that's so weird. You know, I went to my family doctor who has diabetes, which I think is hilarious. I started talking to him about veganism, and he couldn't retaliate. Like, he couldn't say anything back to me. He couldn't have a discussion with me because he just didn't know anything about it. He wasn't knowledgeable, which I think is really, like, scary that our doctors don't know what they're talking about.
I actually had the conversation that I had with Don, the VBS radio producer, this morning before the show. He was saying that he has, I believe, three children. One of them actually engineering the show for us right now, Sean, I believe, and he was saying that he doesn't have health insurance with his family, and he eats the super green foods that we, you know, the powders and then different drinks that we get, and smoothies and, you know, super foods, and he takes certain vitamins, and they never get sick.
Your insurance.
They don't. That's right. Yeah, we had a long discussion about that.
And the idea that that cancer, in fact, is a result of, and disease is a result of acidity in your
in your body.
In your body is just so amazing.
And that's the cure to cancer. It's been found. It's already been found. If you go test your tap water, tell me what pH level it's on. I guarantee you, it is going to be in the red yellow zone. You know. It's all about pH level, alkalinity. You can, like, all foods have an alkalinity pH level. Everything has a pH level.
And our body has a pH level as well.
Yeah, but most of our body's pH level is in, like, our body, I think it's above 7 or 8 is a good pH level. And so you need to be putting foods that are above a 7 or an 8. And if you go onto Dr. Sebi's website, Dr. Sebi is an amazing,
how do you spell it?
Doctor. S-E-B-I, I'm pretty sure. And sadly, he was actually killed off because he started to reveal that the cure to cancer was through alkalinity. But yeah, his website, you can download a PDF of a chart of alkaline and acidic foods. And it's really interesting, some of the foods you get, because apparently tomatoes are really acidic. All these root vegetables we shouldn't actually be eating, because we can't actually just chew on a sweet potato. We have to cook it. So, yeah, that's really interesting. If you go on there and see all the acidity and alkalinity foods.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Well, we should talk more about this. I think we're about to take a break soon.
All right, so after the break, I think it would be really good to also talk about the environmental aspects of veganism.
We can also take callers. I don't have the phone number at the moment, but it is on our webpage, bbsradio.com/universalsoullove. You'll find the call-in number if you want to ask questions. For Alexia.
So we're talking to Alexia,
we'll try
mate.
It.
Yes. And we'll take the break now. This is Dr. Lana Love.
Detective David Love.
From Universal Soul Love. Catch you on
the break. Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love.
We're broadcasting live from the land down under on the BBS Radio Network.
And we have with us our special guest, Alexia Main, who is an animal activist, a vegan life promoter, and a nutritional specialist.
Hi, guys. I have a quote that is actually my favorite quote about all of this stuff, and it goes a little like this. So to kill a living being means to inflict upon him the greatest of all sufferings or evils, for inasmuch as life is the greatest, so the greatest suffering and the greatest evil can befall one is to be deprived of life. So
that, not true.
Yeah, and that I think that is so true, because it is, we seem to love to play God on this earth and say, no, actually, I have the power to take your life away, and I have the power to do this and that. When we don't, we shouldn't be playing God.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a mystic author, so I believe my theory is that all things have life, even plants.
Plant consciousness,
and
yeah.
Yes, trees. Obviously, most people believe trees have some type of consciousness, but then we
they
think
do.
Maybe plastic doesn't.
No, have you ever hugged a tree? It's beautiful.
But in saying that,
well, they've proven that.
Yes, and maybe, you know, I do believe the idea that maybe trees don't have the same type of central nervous system, so they don't feel that same kind of pain. And it to me, I understand it spiritually that it is different in eating plants. However, in saying that, we're also saying that we're not stripping the planet of, vegans are not stripping the planet of plants, and we're not, you know, we call ourselves consumers. That should tell us something. You don't strip the rainforests of trees. We don't do that. There was a book by Daniel Quinn, who's unfortunately not, I don't think he's really speaking or writing much anymore, but he wrote the book of, I think it was called Ishmael, and he was talking about takers and leavers, and it was more about, it was very much sort of tribalistic, the discussion, you know, the Native American Indians, and it was about taking what you need and leaving the rest, and we've become consumers, and we're consuming the planet of everything.
We really are. And there are so many, as we all know, the environment's taking a toll. It's taking a massive toll, and lately there, you know, global warming and all of that, and it's in our faces now. Now we know it's not a joke. Now we know that we actually have to do something fast. Like our beautiful Great Barrier Reef, I'm not going to be around to see it at all because everyone's already killed it. It's really sad to think about.
And this is where veganism is actually really important for the environment.
Oh, God,
because something
yeah.
that people do not understand is that the biggest contribution to greenhouse gases is that the sheep and the cows.
Do you know that by going vegan, you save your carbon, you save more carbon emission, right? You save more carbon emission by driving a car by 50%.
That's amazing.
50%. It is, like, if we're really, really, truly serious about saving this planet, veganism, it would cut everything out. It would just be like a reverse process.
Well, can you explain why it is? What happens to the land when we use agriculture and
okay.
use sheep?
Well, like raising animals for farm, like you've got to grow the crops for the cows and for the pigs and stuff. And that is 30% of our Earth's land mass goes to growing.
30%?
30% goes to growing crops and stuff. And in the United States, 70% of the grain grown is fed to farm animals. Like, imagine how many people we could feed with that amount of grain. We say there's so much, like, world poverty and world hunger. Well, where is it going to? It's going to all the animals and all the cows and all the... Like, how much grain does it take to feed a cow? And how much steak is going to be produced from that cow? Nearly not as much as the grain grown to feed it.
I actually remember, and this was only about less than a year ago, when we were driving from Sydney to Armidale, where we are, we're up in the mountains, and we're driving through all of this, you know, all the farmland going up through the mountains, and I'm looking at all the vacant land, and there's cows everywhere, and I'm looking, and there's no grass, and there's little weeds and trees here and there, and I'm thinking, they couldn't have mowed all this lawn, you know, all this land, just as far as you can see. It's just vacant. There's cows everywhere. and thinking, where's all the grass? They couldn't have mowed it. And then it dawned on me suddenly, and I understood what vegans were talking about in this way. These cows, these few cows, are eating large tracts of land that could have been used to grow crops that would feed so many more people. I'm thinking, this is so inefficient. I can't believe how inefficient this is, that we're giving this much land to cows. And we've got world hunger issues.
It's ridiculous.
I don't understand.
And it's very sad. Just, you know, when you drive through forests, it's beautiful. Mm. The forest is really high. Mm. When you go through farmlands, it's like you have this amount of grass and that's it. It's desecrating the land. Mm. What we should be doing is we should be growing crops that are very super crops. Crops are very rich in vitamins and all other micronutrients. And we could be doing that. Mm. We could be making the land much more productive without having to strip so much of it.
Yeah.
So veganism is probably the greatest contribution that we could do individually towards the environment.
And I know what people are saying. They're going to say, but what about protein?
Right.
What about protein?
That's right.
I'll tell you a little bit about protein. In the 1950s, the World Health Organization doubled our protein intake just for safe measures. Like, we're just going to double this number just in case. Like, in case what? It makes no sense. So we actually don't need as much protein as we think we do at all. Protein should be the least of our worries. We should be worried about all the vitamins, the minerals, our complete amino acid complex. Like, all of those, that is protein. But we shouldn't be worried about how much protein, but the amounts and the down to the micronutrients.
Having said that, for some reason people believe that vegans do not have consumed as much protein. Mm. And we, vegans can get more than enough protein. You look at a gorilla. A gorilla is vegan.
They're huge.
And what about an elephant?
Forces. Yes. All muscle.
An elephant. Like, there are so
all muscle.
All the biggest land grazing animals, they're all so strong and they all just live off plants. But then again, we're not gorillas. We're not tigers. Mm. It's not in our nature to go and hunt down. I dare anyone to go run up to a buffalo and take a bite out of its side. Like, if we were really meant to eat meat, we would be going and attacking, like, buffaloes, or the first, like, go and hunt down a bunny and rip into its neck. No, we need to cook it and season it first for us to be able to eat it. And that just proves how we're not meant to be eating meat, because otherwise we would want to eat it raw. It would be like, our mouths would water at the smell of what?
And at the very least, I guess I consider myself to be a philosopher of sorts. And I would say that even if you don't accept this information, if you're someone who's non-vegan and you're sort of taken aback by this, that's fine.
Listen.
But I want people to just ask yourself questions. Question your beliefs and values.
Question everything.
And think for yourself. And don't accept everything.
I think that's a major problem in our society today. We've learned not to question anything. I think it's through schooling, actually. As a young person, it's through schooling that we're taught that being wrong is the worst thing in the world. Mm. And so, therefore, we learn not to question authority, not to question ourselves, not to question anything, when that is the most, like, all we own is our thoughts and emotions. Mm. So we should question everything. Take everything with a pinch of salt.
Questioning yourself is far more important. Questioning your own thoughts and feelings and beliefs is far more important than questioning other people's statements and claims, I think. Because you're internalizing it. It's no longer what they say is right. Once you've internalized it and you've accepted it, it's now yours. So you need to question it.
And of course, our own beliefs do arise from the world around us. Hmm. So it's very important not to be influenced so much.
Life is an internal experience. We experience life in our minds. I'm getting a little philosophical, metaphysical here, but nonetheless.
So I'd love to also talk about what sort of varied diet you need as a vegan, because you do need a varied diet.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just, eat the same thing all the time. You need variety, don't you? You need all the ingredients that is necessary for your diet. Can you tell us a little bit about that? About the types of vegetables that you should be eating?
Yeah, sure. So, as a vegan, you'll find that you can't just, it's a lot harder when you start out, especially the type of diet you want to be on. I mean, within that veganism group, you can be a plant-based vegan, you can be raw or you can have, there are amazing mock meats out there, especially when transitioning, mock meats, mock cheeses,
They made it so much easier.
They make it so much easier before you truly transition into a plant-based diet, which is primarily what I'm on. But you need to eat a range of different fruits and vegetables. And just to keep it interesting, just to keep it fun. And you'll find that when you first go vegan, you think it's a lot blander. But that's just because you, when you go vegan, you sort of learn how to season and cook things more, and season with like with herbs and spices, and that's how you really truly make a dish interesting. It's not what's in the dish; it's by the herbs and the spices and the cooking choices.
And I think also, if you look at the color of the food, that actually gives us some idea of the vitamins in it. It's quite good to have food which is different colors. You know, carrots.
Colors of the rainbow, yeah.
Orange, you know, there's certain vitamins in there. Green, purple, red. Yeah, I think it's very good.
Rainbow.
To have,
eat the rainbow.
I didn't know how to cook before I came to Australia and before I came
you
vegan.
Went vegan. And then you had to learn how to.
And I didn't. What I mean, did I burnt toast. I mean, I didn't even know how to cook anything. And I suddenly, maybe I was getting cooking lessons from the goddess or something, the divine feminine essence, part of my spiritual awakening. But I started, you know, looking at what was available and, you know, throwing oil, olive oil and all whatever was in the house together and throwing spices in. And I actually learned how to cook food as a result. And I can tell you that there's a wide, when I first became vegan, I thought the same thing. I was calling up Lana from Florida saying, there's nothing for me to buy. There's nothing for me to eat. I'm going to starve to death. And then, as time went on, I realized there's plenty to eat.
There's so much. We just don't see it. You just don't see it at first.
And you actually end up having a more varied diet than when you have meat. Yeah. Because with meat, you have meat with potatoes, meat with rice, meat with peas. When you become vegan, you actually get to know many more vegetables exist. You know, the whole world and range.
And you get to, it's really exciting to learn how to cook for the first time, how to make beautiful coconut curries or stir fries and all of this sort of like plant-based foods that are really healthy for you but taste really good as well.
And the other thing is having shakes, having a blender.
I live by my Nutri Ninja. My Nutri Ninja was the best gift ever given to me. I have smoothies 24/7, at least three times.
You make the most scrumptious smoothies.
This morning we had a banana, frozen berries, soy milk, and 2 scoops of hemp protein powder.
That was my breakfast
this morning.
It's really, really lovely. It actually makes you feel more energized. I know I've had more energy since I've become vegan.
Really?
You feel lighter. Because when you have meat, you sort of feel heavy.
Yeah, you get accustomed to like a full feeling, but you don't realize what full actually means. Full is not the sluggish, like now you can go sleep on the couch. You feel so like, oh, you're so full you can't move. Full is a different sort of feeling where you can still get up and do anything, but you're full to a different extent. So it's really cool to be able to differentiate between the two.
It's more than, rather than being full, you feel energized.
Satiated.
The proof is in the vegan pudding.
That's visual
evidence.
Your skin as well when you go vegan. It's such a big difference. It clears up completely. And you can really tell people's health through their skin. Our skin is our largest organ. Like, you can really, really see if it's benefiting or if it needs a little bit more help, but just by looking at somebody. Like, people who have acne and all that oil and pus, that's all because of the milk and the dairy and the pus trying to escape your skin in some way, shape, or form.
I mean, the lovely Lana's only 40 and she looks 30.
I thought I was 21. But anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right.
You can't win with this person.
So I'd like to ask you also about your activism with animals, because I know that you've gone to many rallies.
Yeah.
And I know that you've been very excited about, you know, the turnout there and the possibility of people to change the various laws. Tell us about some of the rallies you've been to.
Yeah, so I go to a lot of, because I'm from Sydney, I go to a lot of the animal activism rallies that around town hall, or they change every single location is different, of course. But I go to a lot of them, and it can be about, you know, live exports or recently, and I was really, really sad to hear, I was rallying a lot against the new law that has sadly just been passed, and it is to be able to farm animals for their organs, for our use. And I just think that's so disgusting. And we were really trying to get this law not to pass, but unfortunately it did. And to be honest, I just think that, like, why don't we think we're so much more special than a pig, than a cow, or a duck? We're not.
Superiority
complex. Like, seriously, we think we're so cool.
We suffer from speciesism, don't we?
Speciesism is seriously the longest plague that's been around ever. Yeah. Like, why do we think we're so good? Like, we think we're complete, like, excuse my French, but top shit. We're not at all.
We're part of nature. We're not outside of nature or above nature. We're part of it, dependent on it, fully dependent on the planet and everything on it. We're fully integrated.
Like, our egos are so big that we love to just put ourselves on the top of that pyramid, even though in reality we're probably not at the top of
that
pyramid.
It's interesting that if humanity died out, the planet would be much better.
It would thrive.
If the bees continue to die the way they are, if the fish continue to die, our
bees, back to bees.
We're not going to be able to survive.
That's another thing that vegans don't consume, honey. And now a lot of people actually question this one. But I'm all for not eating honey, and it's because the queen bee actually gets her wings ripped off for her not to leave the hive. And to me, as a feminist as well, I stand for all of womankind, you know?
Yeah.
And that includes the bees, the cows, and no, I'm not going to put honey in my tea, even if I'm feeling sick, because, like, that's someone's wings got ripped off. That's just not nice.
How do you feel about wild honey?
I feel like if I found it myself, sure, I'd go pick it, I'd go eat it respectfully, I'd ask permission to do so before I did. Like, everything needs to be an equal exchange of energy. Yeah. Everything needs to be an equal exchange.
Law of equilibrium.
Exactly,
That's what I got in Daniel Quinn's book, Ishmael. He asked a question, and it was a private investigator. That was actually in that book. It was a strange thing, but I think he asked a question. You know, there was something that he was, the character in that book was a seeker, and he said, you know, there's an answer here that you need to find, I believe. I went this many years ago, and he was talking about the law of competition in that book, I believe, and some other universal laws or cosmic laws, natural laws. And I came up with the law of equilibrium. That's what came to mind during my spiritual awakening. And it was about balance, or in Buddhism, the golden medium, which is what you're talking about, an equal exchange of energy. Very important to maintain that harmony and that balance in the world. And veganism, I believe, and animal rights activism, is a direct reaction to what's happening in the world, because we're so out of balance with Mother Earth and
Gaia.
And Gaia, yes. So
the irony is we are supposedly the more intelligent. I don't know if we are. But we are able to be aware of ourselves.
The only difference between us and everyone else is that we have the ability to. We have compassion and we have empathy, and we have the ability to look into an animal's eyes and ask the question, why are they sad? Why are they upset? But no, we're not the more intelligent ones. You know, dogs think with their noses. We can't do that at all. Like, all these animals have the most, like, a cat can fall from a height where we would die at, and it would be fine and walk away. Like, the intelligence isn't necessarily in, like,
I guess what I'm trying to say, though, we have the capacity to make different decisions.
Well, exactly. We have,
other animals might not have that capacity because they actually aren't as.
But we should be protecting the weaker ones, you know?
That's right. We have, like, a duty to do
so
that.
What I'd like to say strength is, strength isn't on earth to throw at it and upon others. We should be using our strength to protect things.
I think we should be the guardians of
the earth. The guardians,
not the
exactly.
The destroyers of the earth. Mm. And I think we can do so much.
Like, I would want an animal to look at me, any animal, any species, and say, oh my God, like, who is this? Like, I want to go play with it instead of, oh my God, it's a devil, run. And at this stage, if any animal looks at a human, they think it's the devil and want to run.
I mean, I am of the opinion personally, although I do believe in being the peaceful warrior, but I do think that part of me thinks that we have a duty, and this is part of our self-defense, to defend Mother Earth and defend the animals, and we may have to use of force to do that, because we're being murdered. We're doing this ourselves.
Our planet has been murdered.
We're it's like a self-imposed death sentence.
That's right.
And it's very serious.
What people don't realize is if we kill you, we actually kill ourselves.
Yeah. I know. Why are people so obnoxious? It's so strange.
All right. We should probably finish up here. Thank you very much, Alexia. You're so knowledgeable. I'm so proud of you.
Great job.
And, you know, all
the best
for
the future. I'm just so passionate about this. Like, it just brings, like, this warmth to my heart to be able to, like, talk and spread this message. Like, God, it's so important to me.
It's wonderful. We have a great future in front of you because you're so knowledgeable and you're so passionate about what you do. And I know that you've got a blog coming up soon.
I do, yes. It's still under construction at the moment, but it will be out. Yeah.
Look forward to having you again here. Other shows.
We do have a few more minutes. And I wanted to mention one other thing that came to mind. The other day you saw a post on Facebook, and it was about some scientists or some corporation or whatnot that was using a beetle, and they were turning the beetle into a cyborg, and they were putting wires into the beetle to control the beetle, and they thought this was brilliant. And I'm sorry, I don't know who's doing this.
It's not brilliant.
This is not
not
a judgment on the person. I know they think they're doing the right thing, but this is a bit twisted and morbid.
It's so twisted. Like, what? I couldn't even watch this video. I was shown it. I couldn't watch it. It's morbid.
I just want to ask, why do we need to do this? We've got drones. We don't need to be controlling the beetle. The beetles are supposed to be free and doing their own thing.
Poor beetle.
Living their lives. I mean, you know, microscopic organisms and we're very preferential. I mean, all things have the right to life and the right freedom of movement. They all have natural rights.
We have to recognize that.
We have beneficial bacteria in our body, and we have invading bacteria in our body, and our immune system handles the invading bacteria. And if an animal attacks us, obviously we can defend ourselves from a dangerous animal. There's this natural process that takes place. We don't need to wipe out an entire species of anything because we feel threatened by it, but we can certainly defend ourselves when we're actually attacked. I believe this is all common sense, but maybe
I think it is
absolutely.
I guess we're ending a little bit early, but
are we?
Well, we've got a few minutes. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add, or
what would you like to do in the future?
No, I have nothing I want to say. So we all have the want to get away from pain, the want to reproduce, the want to be free. And these are wants that extend amongst every single species on Earth, including us, which just shows that how not special we are, because we're not special. And it just shows how much, like, we should just think of all animals on an equal playing field instead of such a hierarchical who eats who sort of thing.
Yeah, there was this concept I think I came up with another one. Book of Metaphysical Theories, my book, The First Truth. It was something called the Separate but Equal Theory of Consciousness, which simply means, you know, we're all one, oneness of consciousness, law of one, oneness. But yes, we have unique personalities. That doesn't make us special, because when we start to think we're special, that feeds the ego. I mean, you could say we're special to a degree in the sense that we are unique personalities. But we are not separate, so therefore we're not that special. So we need to be careful in that kind of thinking. Yeah.
As humans, we have to be humble, and we have to promote life on Earth.
And love, just emanate love instead of ego.
And if you've got this, if you feel that you've got this ultimate power because you can dominate and control and subject everything underneath you to your will, that's not true power. That's a false sense of worldly power, because true power is internal power. It's personal power. It's inner power.
Absolutely.
It's more about you and making wise decisions.
And I love how you say everything should come from love.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not thinking, breathing, eating, sleeping, love, then what are you doing?
And that's what everyone needs. I mean, like, I think it was in the Bible, And I'm not against the Bible entirely, and maybe not so much for religion per se, major religion, but in the Bible, I think Jesus Christ said, humans cannot live by bread and water alone. I think it was by the word of God, but I'd sort of replace that or interpret that as love. Every living thing needs love, even probably more than food and water to some extent, because you'll die without love. And I've seen this, and I've seen the studies of Romanian orphans, and I've written this in my book, and the monkeys, the experiments that were done where they separate them from their mothers, they become mentally retarded and I'm not saying this correctly, but they develop cognitive impairments.
They just don't develop the way they should. Love is so important.
Yes.
And I think we need to have love in our choices. I think that's very important. Mm-hmm. And love towards ourselves.
And it's a big thing. You let your ego stop you in so many ways. Like, I remember the first time I got told that I was wrong about eating meat and stuff like that. I threw plates across the room. Throwing plates across the room. Because my ego was just going full force. Like, no, I can't be wrong. I can't be wrong. And when you just sit back, relax, meditate on it, realize that, look, it's okay to be wrong, that's okay, but like, you can't keep shutting it out knowing that it's not quite right. That's why, like, any argument I'll get into about veganism, people just start getting defensive because they know that in the end they can't argue over this, and it's just their ego that takes over.
That's actually very exciting to make a change.
It is so exciting
that in middle age, you know, if you make a change, it's just so interesting to
consider.
We grow all the time. And when
you don't just stop growing when you reach like 21 or something.
That's right.
Like
we develop all the time. So it's interesting. So I would, you know, I would encourage our listeners to look into this. Look into your heart.
Just go watch some there's Cowspiracy on Netflix, there's What the Health, there's the other one? I can't really remember, but
Earthlings.
Yeah. Earthlings, oh, that one is intense though, so be ready for that.
All right,
well, we'll have to finish off there. Thank you very much, Alexia.
Thank you, Alexia.
You're so knowledgeable.
Thanks.
I wish you all the best in the future. And please
you.
Come back on the show with us to talk some more about veganism. So this is Universal Soul Love, Dr. Lana Love.
Detective David Love.
Saying goodbye for now. See you next week.
Bye for now. Lots of love.